Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon, Sheffield.
Ooh, hello, Sheffield.
Hello, this is the film show, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and on digital. I'm Martin.
I'm Denise.
For the pedants out there, I might have said good morning when it's actually good afternoon.
You've got Robin Williams carried away there.
I apologise there for my over enthusiasm.
3 minutes late for that.
I know, yeah. 15 minutes late you were for getting here this morning as well.
Still out of breath from that run.
I know. Still wheezing. Them stairs get longer every week, don't they? That's why I always get here earlier. I can put, you know, one of those silver foil things around me and try and...
You've got a little lady that waits halfway up for you.
Breathe into a brown paper bag. And then by the time it's showtime, I'm here. I'm firing on all cylinders.
An example to us all, Martin Carter.
I'll be advertising my workout video. It's on VHS, everyone, so it's...
I thought it'd be Betamax, so never mind.
Well, Betamax was the better system, if you remember, technically, but...
I mean, that's why I thought it.
I'm now going to... I had a Betamax system, and if you know, but there was no Betamax tapes you could hire. What have I done? That's pedantry for you. Anyway, sorry, back to the 21st century. Gossip.
Well, we've not got a lot, have we?
No, there's not much. In fact, we've been scraping around for a few weeks here. I think we've pulled the victory from the jaws of defeat this week because I was... Well, we'll get to that in a bit when we get to the music selections. But...
Mr. David Lynch.
There is going to be a sale of some of David Lynch's personal items, some of which are props from his films and some which are his own personal possessions. Such things as VHS tapes of Eraserhead.
Ooh.
A five-necked guitar, which was personally made and designed for him.
Five necks?
It's an octopus.
Oh, okay. I would leave them a hand for smoking a cigarette as well.
Maybe they're all tuned differently. Log Lady mugs, Twin Peaks walkie-talkies, red curtains and a patterned rug so you can have your front room looking like the Red Room. Now, that'd be quite disturbing.
I think
for
some
evening.
People do.
I know.
I've seen online bathrooms that look like the Red Room, and I'm like, I kind of want to relax in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I want it to be a safe place.
there's some stuff here which I think is going to be. It will cost an absolute fortune. There's his own personal 35mm print of Eraserhead. God knows what that is going to. What that's going to go now?
A pair of stuffed deer heads.
That look nice in your front room, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I'm a vegan, but I like David Lynch.
Give me a break. Come on. So all of this is, you know, it's not like he's having a boot sale or anything with this stuff. But this is all being handled by. Los Angeles-based memorabilia specialist Julien's.
Oh, but there are some like interesting things in there as well for like production materials and things.
Some of that sounds really fascinating, which you would have thought would be going. I don't know,
like a
film museum or library, you know, to look at that with scripts of unstarted, unfinished projects.
There must be loads.
Yeah, because he also, you know. He put forward loads of ideas for films and TV series.
Well, it mentions Ronnie Rocket and the Dream of the Bovine.
Yeah.
A surreal detective story planned in the late 70s following up.
Ronnie Rocket was knocking around for decades with him. Dream of the Bovine, which this article says, it's about three guys who used to be cows.
Look.
But Dean Stanton and Marlon Brando were approached. Marlon Brando said, and put your fingers in your ears if you don't like bad languages, pretentious bull S.
Bull poo, but with a very much more pleasing sound.
Yeah. That's it. This sale goes on until June the 18th. I'm sure you can go online, but I think it's all going to be top dollar. You won't get many... bargains in it, I think. And let's face it, it's going to be swarming with Lynchophiles, isn't it?
With money.
Yeah. Mm. I have a signed print of his in my front room anyway. So
you do?
I do. And a Mulholland Drive poster. and David Lynch underpants. No, I don't.
Okay,
I don't.
Right.
No,
you've gone
no,
too far now.
No.
That's a bit weird.
Right. what's next?
Well, we were going to do some... Do you want to do some trailer trash?
Yes. The Smashing Machine. I saw this last week in the cinema. And I'm sitting there watching, who is that? I thought, I know him, but... And I should have known who it was. I thought, is that someone in like a muscle suit or something? But it's a new Dwayne Johnson film.
The Rock.
The Rock. And you know, with these sorts of actors, every now and again, I think, enough of all this special effects, franchise stuff that I've been working on for nearly all my career and getting lots of money for, I want to be a serious actor.
Yeah, and you can do that when you've got 16 yeah. houses, no, can't yeah. you?
And this features Dwayne Johnson as, I think it was called Universal Fighting UFC. It's a bit like mixed... what do they call it? Mixed martial arts.
I don't know,
sort
you lost
thing.
Me at UFC.
Yeah, you know, so it's a bit of wrestling, a bit of martial arts, a bit of just punching people in the
it's
face.
It's what men do when they can't do showgirl.
I think so. Yeah. It's a male showgirl sort yeah. of thing, I think it is. And it's based on the true story of a guy called Mark Kerr, who became very big in this sport, and I'll call it a sport for now, but... had a terrible time with injuries. His managers just kept him going all the time with loads and loads of pain-killing drugs. And so he went through hell with it. I think he's written a redemptive book about it, redemptive documentary, and now there's a redemptive feature film. And Emily Blunt is in it.
Emily R.M.?
Oh, you know, but then she makes some left field decisions. I mean, she was pretty good with a machine gun in Sicario, wasn't she? You know, so well,
it's
looks
from A24 as well, isn't it?
Well, yeah. that was the other thing. A24. You know, he's lashing himself to the mask of
respectability.
Respectability.
Indie respectability.
Sort of.
Yeah. Mm. He looks very. What's that word? Oily and sweaty, innit?
Yeah, I mean, you get the impression he's probably really pumped himself up even more than what he would normally do. But have a look. It looks... well, the other thing is it's written and directed by Benny Safdie.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like hardcore sort of indie movies he's in yeah. here. This isn't just, you know, I'll still get a $25 million paycheck. No, he's probably been on union rates. So let's see if he... can come up to the task and put in a decent performance.
Could be a whole new world.
Let's hope he's not urinating into empty water bottles because he doesn't want to leave the set, as he was on that Christmas film.
Oh. Oh.
You broke that story.
Oh, I know. Next. I've just got a vision I can't shake off.
It would seem so.
We're only just into the afternoon. Yes.
We've got a few of these this week. Shall I start off with the passing of the great documentary filmmaker Marcel Ofels? Ofels was the maker of truly monumental documentary movies, often tackling very, very difficult topics and finding a lot of resistance even being released in the countries that were the subjects of his films. He was actually the son of the equally great director Max Ofels, who made some of the finest films of the 1940s and 1950s, both in Hollywood and in Europe. In fact, probably his most famous film, La Ronde, was, I believe, the first X film ever released in this country, the first film to get an X certificate in this country.
When I was a little kid, I thought they were just kisses because they were so lovely.
Lovely.
Oh, dear,
and now
sorry.
Here you are doing a radio show on film.
I was very small.
But Ophuls' stuff was incredibly controversial, and probably his most famous film is The Sorrow and the Pity. An epic four-hour investigation of a French town, Clermont-Ferrand, during the Nazi occupation. And it's an astonishing piece of work where he's talking to people who were in the resistance. There's people who collaborated with the Germans. There's even Germans who were stationed in the city. And it caused such an uproar in France. In fact, it was banned for several years because it completely blew away the myth that when the Nazis occupied, every Frenchman was fighting against them. It's a truly brilliant film. If you can get the chance to see it, it is available on Blu-ray. It's a film you have to see because it gives a whole new view of what living in an occupied country. And although it's specifically about France, I think the same rules would have applied if the Nazis had ever invaded here.
Yeah.
You would have had quite a lot of people who would have happily gone along with them.
Well, I mean, look at the English class, the upper classes were apologists for it from the beginning.
And you forget just how popular Oswald Mosley was with certain parts of the British public. So it's a sad farewell to Ophuls. And we have another one now. Do you want to do Loretta?
Yeah, go on.
Could you do Loretta?
Oh,
sorry. To do the bell.
Yeah. It's your format. Come on. So, hot on the heels of George Vent, sitcom legend last week, we lost Loretta Swit this week in New York at the age of 87. A television and theatre actress from a young age, but best known as Hot Lips Houlihan in the TV series of MASH, which was itself sort of an adaptation that came out of Robert Altman's film. Now, she wasn't the original Hot Lips in the film.
That was Sally Kellerman, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And she also, interestingly, I had forgotten this, but she played the original Cagney in the pilot for Cagney and Lacey.
Yes, she did. Yeah.
Which went on to be played by two actors, but took over by Sharon Glass. But much known for Hot Lips Houlihan, and that was from 1972 to 1983. And it's sort of, MASH was had such a big impact. And so it's set in the Korean War, and it's a mobile army surgical hospital of American doctors and nurses, of which Loretta Swit played Hot Lips Houlihan, the chief nurse. She really developed that character over that course. How many episodes did we say it was? 256. And she was in all but 11 of them.
Yeah.
It made her an international recognisable face.
And paid the mortgage, I would have thought, for 12 years. Yeah.
But she really did something to soften that character. Because the early, I don't know if you've watched much MASH, is it like...
I watched it first of all. I got bored with it. So it did sort of bland out. The early ones were pretty good.
The early ones
good.
Were a bit anarchic. Yeah. And it was all about... But she was often the foil of things, and she was a sort of thinly, not a very fully fleshed character, and she developed that a lot over it. So in, like, from about the second or third series on, there was a bit more depth and reason to her, and she really formed her into a much more interesting character. It's hit and miss, some of the old episodes, aren't they? But it's difficult to understate how much resonance they had at the time, especially it was set during the Korean War, but it was as broadcast as Americans.
War, the Vietnam War was still on, wasn't it? Yeah.
So, and there was this. It's an interesting one to rewatch now because some of it you go, I'm not sure how current audiences can relate to this because it's a bit near the bone. But it's also incredibly funny. It's a bit of a comfort. TV show for me. And Loretta Swit are very much a reason for that.
And finally, I must admit, this was a name that was new to me. Mohamed Lakhdar Hamina, who passed away this week, who was an Algerian director and was the first Arab African director to win the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. His film, Chronicle of the Years of Fire, won the award in 1975, and it was a historical drama about Algeria and its war of independence over a number of decades. I must admit, I don't know anything about this filmmaker. I'm intrigued, and I'm going to try and find out a bit more and see if there's any way of seeing any of his films. As we'll be talking about Cannes very shortly anyway, there's someone who was like quite historic in being one of the first, Arab directors to win that award. Right, music.
Yes, we've got a theme this week, haven't we? And it starts with a very recognisable theme in itself.
Yeah. Shall I just go into the theme?
Yeah.
See if you can guess what it is. Thank you all. That was the Mission Impossible theme. I don't know which film it's from because I listened to so many of them yesterday. At the end of it, I couldn't care less which one I put on. So
don't worry, the theme is not Mission Impossible. It's Tom Cruise.
Maybe we should have done Mission Impossible. Yeah. So we're going to be playing music from Tom Cruise movies. And I have to say, I hated putting this together. It was not so much the music. I ended up getting a selection of music I quite liked, but I had to look at clips of Cruise movies, and it really brought back to me how much I dislike Tom Cruise.
Well, I've got a weird thing with Tom Cruise in that he's a quite senior figure in a cult, so I really struggle with him. But it's undeniable that he's one of the last sort of superstars of A-list Hollywood, isn't
he? Yeah.
And he's done such a large body of work and been in and worked with so many amazing, famous directors. But killer soundtracks for so many of the films that he's in.
There certainly were. and it always seemed like the best songs, which are many that were with scenes that I absolutely abhor. I think the next track we play will be one of those. But anyway, the Cannes Film Festival finally.
They announced all their winners last Saturday, didn't they?
Came to a halt, and we can go through some of the awards. We're not going to go through everything, but the coveted Palme d'Or, the Golden Palm. So I'm almost fluent in French these days, aren't I? Went to the Iranian director, Jafar Panahi. And Panahi has, over the past 15, 20 years. For a lot of the time, he's been under house arrest in Iran, and he's still been able to make films. He's made films on an iPhone, just in his house, and he's had them smuggled out of Iran on memory sticks, and they've competed in major film festivals around the world. He seems to have finally got a little more leeway in being able to make and then take his films abroad. And his latest film, which has won this award, is called A Simple Accident, or Un Simple Accident.
Yeah, I think it's got another translation as well of It Was Just an Accident.
Yeah.
I think it depends.
And it seems to be, the canned description is very brief. What begins as a minor accident sets in a motion of escalating consequences. And it would seem to be that it sets off memories about what's happened to people during the past 20 years or so in Iran, and political oppression that they have had to suffer. So, I think Panahi's a great director. I have watched a number of his films, and it's going to be interesting seeing him working on a bigger canvas, or actually being able to go outside and make a film, you know. So I'm very, very excited about that. What did you have?
Well, Un Certain Regard, which sort of highlights sort of new or interesting or different films. The Mysterious Gaze of the Flamingo, Diego, now how do you say this? Céspedes? Just say it quickly.
I'm leaving it with you.
But that's, that looks like quite a lot of countries involved as well. Chile, France, Germany, Spain, Belgium. And it looks like a drama, and it's his debut. Set in a remote mining town in northern Chile in 1984. And there's an illness, and there's... It looks interesting. And that one in certain regard.
Okay. The jury... Oh, sorry. The Grand Prix prize went to Joachim Trier's Sentimental Value. I'm going to say the English translation because I'm not good at Swedish, which has Stellan Skarsgård and Renata Reinsver, I think, who was in his previous film. Was that the most terrible person in the world, wasn't it?
The worst person in the
world. Worst person in the world.
Yeah.
And also Elle Fanning, and it's the story of a director, played by Skarsgård, who, on whose new project he doesn't have one of his daughters play the lead role, but brings in a star from Hollywood. And mayhem ensues, it would seem, in a sort of Swedish, sort of domestic folk sort of mayhem. But anything by Trier is always worth a watch. The film we talked about the other week, Sound of Falling, shared the jury prize with a French Moroccan film called Sirat, which looks amazing. It's all set out in the deserts of Morocco, at raves, and the...
Oh, I remember those days.
Yeah.
I never went to a rave in the desert, but some woods, maybe.
Visually, it looks absolutely incredible. So I'm going to keep an eye out for that. Best director went to... Why have I chosen this one? I've got to pronounce this. Here we go. Kleber Mendonça Filho. Nothing I came out of that quite well.
Yeah,
apart from the...
Portuguese
listeners are phoning in already. Switchboard's lighting up here. with his new film, The Secret Agent. Now, I think this is a great director. He's one of the best directors working at the moment. His previous film, Baccarat, did you see that?
Yes, I absolutely adored that.
Wow.
I mean, it was sprawling as well, wasn't it? The story just went places I didn't expect.
And this, I think, is going to be the same. It's over 2.5 hours, and it's set in Brazil during the 1970s, with, again, political oppression, terrorists, It's going to be great. Because you also did Aquarius as well with a few years. Have you seen that?
No,
with Sonia Braga?
No.
That is just a beautiful, beautiful film. So that one is really on my list. And acting-wise, Nadia Meliti.
The
petite dernière. And I think she's
little
only...
sister to you.
Okay. and I think she was only 22. It's her very first film. Similar to Rosetta, what the Dardons did many years ago. There's not a trailer. There's a brief clip on the Cannes website. Again, it looks really, really interesting. And Best Actor went to Wagner Moura, and he was the star of The Secret Agent. So he was in Civil War. And if you've watched a lot of Narcos, he played Pablo Escobar. So he'll be familiar to English-speaking audiences. So like it always is now, we now have to wait and see when these films are going to dribble out to us. But I'm, the thing with Cannes is, it's like, as it should be, when you hear what films are on, you have no idea what most of them are. And normally by the end of the festival, you've got a list of films that you really want to go and see.
Yeah.
But that's what's great about Cannes. It's making you aware of new films.
I think last year when we talked about it, I was like, so Oscars is the end of the year for film, and Cannes is like, ta-da, this is what this year's going to be, come on.
Yeah. And if you think last year's Cannes, well, Anora won the Palme d'Or there and then went on to win the Oscars. And it's rare where you get that crossover from Cannes to... the Academy Awards.
Well, we
don't I don't think there's going to be many from this year's listing, apart from maybe one of these winning Best Foreign Film Award. But you never know. Mm. You never know.
Mm.
There you are. That was Cannes 2025.
Cannes in the can.
So we can stop talking about that now. And go on to... another piece of music.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we were doing this Tom Cruise playlist, and as I was saying, I was having such a difficult time doing it, mainly because I bought the new Stereolab album this week, and all I wanted to do
was listen to
the Stereolab, but I had to trawl through.
And then some idiot said to you, why don't we do a Tom Cruise playlist?
And stupidly, I thought...
and let you do it.
Stupidly, I thought, I'm so desperate, that sort of get me out of jail card sort of thing. I'll do that, only to find... And it wasn't so much the music... it was the clips that I was looking at to see where they were used, and it just reminded me.
That guy.
Just how much I loathe the man. You know, more of that later, I'm sure.
I did a thing where I Mission Impossible. I watched the first one when it came out, and I didn't bother with the rest. And then I felt like loads of people said, you really should watch it for the special effects. Never watch a film because someone tells you to watch it for the special effects.
Yeah.
But I did watch all of them in the space of a year on, you know, streaming.
Were you having under heavy medication during that time?
Spotify is like, oh, one of your favourite actresses is Tom Cruise. I know he's not. I was just doing...
You leave yourself open to this exploitation. Anyway, this particular song... was my low point yesterday, where I'd forgotten how bad this scene was.
It's such a good film, though. And it is such an iconic film of the... Oh, I've said iconic. Martin's given me bad looks. But it's such a memorable scene from the 80s cinema. He's going to play now. He's going to sell...
Warren Zevon, Werewolves of London from The Colour of Money.
Menu in his hand, while walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks. Gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein. Kitchen door. You better not let him in. Little old lady got mutilated late last night. Werewolves of London again. Gent who ran amok in Kent. Lately he's been overheard in Mayfair. You better stay away from him. He'll rip your lungs out, Jim. I'd like to meet his tailor. Saw Lon Chaney walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw Lon Chaney Jr. walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw a werewolf drinking a pina colada at Trader Vic's, and his hair was perfect.
Werewolves of London, from The Colour of Money. A great song, but a scene that actually appalls me.
Is it the way he's strutting
along? It's the way he's strutting along, and you know, I've always thought that is him. Now, it's either a great performance or he's just being himself. But it's almost unwatchable, as you wanted him to just put that wire into the pocket.
Not even saved by Paul Newman's presence.
No.
Killer soundtrack, though. Thank you.
Yeah, but so many of these Tom Cruise films, I realise I've only seen them once when they came out in the cinema, and I'd go to see them. And I've never had them. I've never sat and watched them at home. I've never had them on DVD, Blu-ray, VHS, Betamax, and. Yeah, I don't like him.
Yeah, aren't we? This is what you tune in and listen into,
and
undiluted. I can't stand the guy. What are you going to do?
Undiluted, horrible opinions.
So it's not. So I married the guy. What am I going to do?
He's from Jersey. oh no, he's going off on one again. Oh, let's hope Denise comes in and calms him down
and ask you, well, since you can't stand him, what you thought of his
new
film.
You've picked the wrong moment for that, because last week, while I was off on my jollies, as you put it so nicely, I drew the short straw and had to go and see Mission Impossible. Is it 7, 8, 7.5, 8.5? Final Reckoning.
It was 8.5 hours long.
It felt like it. This is allegedly the wrap-up to the series. And it's like a second part to... What was the last one? Dead Reckoning?
Oh, I don't know.
That was why I couldn't remember what the title of the piece of music was.
My list of what's out next week is Mission Possible, whichever number.
Yeah. Take your pick. Yeah. So it's nearly 3 hours long. I have to say, I had no idea what was going on during it. It's some big thing about an AI virus or something called The Entity, which is going to invade all of the computers in the world and take over all of the nuclear weapons in the world and be able to control them.
If only there was a man that could save us.
And I'm just like, well, why? In the words of Larry David, in the word of Larry David's wife in, you know, Kirby, why would you do that? What would be the point of that?
We've got to make a movie!
So, Cruise gets together the Mission Impossible team, and this film takes forever to get going. And we're going to introduce a new feature, which will be occasionally we will use when it comes to films that are...
Only if they've got a cheekily long running time.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And as this one is nudging the three-hour mark, this is our inaugural Pillow Talk spot. Yes.
In this segment, we will be advising when is the best time to take a power nap in the middle of a film. And for this one, Martin?
I'd say the first 90 minutes.
Okay.
Because is this film ever going to get going? And it eventually does, and there's these big action sequences. This interminable sequence underwater on a Soviet submarine where, you know, it's all in pitch darkness, but he finds this, you know, memory stick of, you know, whatever it is. And
are the stunts good?
I think I just switched off from it. I mean, there's all this stuff at the end in a biplane. And, yeah, some of it obviously is done hanging on to the side of a plane.
I'll give him that. He can hang on to the side of a plane.
You know, is that it? Is that what I'm just going to... I've waited 3 hours to see him.
Did you like the rest of the franchise? I
like the original Brian De Palma one.
So, is there, if you like that, will you like this? Or if you preferred that, are you less
I am fairly lonely staying here that I didn't really like, you know, but it's too long. And if it is the end, please God let it be the end. Because, you know, like, Cruise has no chemistry with any of his female leading actresses in these films.
They don't last long, do they?
No. I mean, Hayley Atwell, she was annoying in Dead Reckoning. And in this one, she's like, oh, yeah, can you go and sort of do that for me? Yeah, all right. I'll have a coffee, please. You know? No sugar. but the one thing I will say about it, the one curious thing about it, it's a film that sort of, there's some stuff in it that... He's very much against what the current American administration is. Angela Bassett is a black American president. Hannah Waddingham, yes, Hannah Waddingham, is the admiral of an American aircraft carrier. The American submarine has a black captain. And one of the sailors on the submarine is ginger. So, I mean, this is DEI gone mad. And the other thing, maybe on a little more serious note, is like it goes through the list of all the countries that whose computers are being taken over. And Israel is one of them. So the first time I've seen it actually declared that Israel is a nuclear power. You know, that's almost... the unsaid.
Well,
so, you know, I know you're going to go and see it. Don't blame me when you come out disappointed. I told you. But
and if you want to get a nap sleep, in the first 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I caught up with The Salt Path, which is debut director Marianne Elliott's interpretation of Raina Wynne's memoir. The Salt Path, which is... so she'd written it for her husband, and basically they lost their dream Welsh farmhouse due to a dodgy investment, which is sort of introduced a bit in the film. They've been married for 30-plus years, and they have the bailiffs at the door and decide, shall we just walk? They see a walking guide that's in amongst their possessions and decide to walk. And so Gillian Anderson plays Ray, and Jason Isaacs plays Moth. To throw something else into it, they find out about the same time that he has a terminal illness, which affects his ability to walk and speak, all sorts. So lots of horrible things going on for them. It's a 2-hour film, and I could have done with it a little bit tighter. I think the narrative's kind of wanders a bit as they walk. And there's a sort of clunky bit at the end, towards the end, where they pause on the walk and they go away for the winter, which is probably exactly what really happened in their life, but it just seems a bit odd in the film, the way it sort of comes about. I think what makes it, though, a good watch, Gillian Anderson and Jason Isaacs just clearly show this couple, and they are each other's world. And it doesn't resort to ridiculous over-dramatisation. Like, big things, small things happen that are big. You know, they're living on, like, £40 a week. And there's like this moment where she goes to get some cash out of a cash point, and it's like the tensest moment, probably tenser than anything in a Mission Impossible, as there will this £40 come out, yeah. You know. And they come across people along the way, and it is in the way that in a memoir it makes sense that you just see someone and then they disappear, but in a film there's something, and I can't put my finger on that. It's not perfect, but it's still, I think, a worthy film to see. And you can't go wrong with the locations. I mean, it's gorgeous coastline. And I think what makes it is their performance and the scenery, although it could just have done with a little bit shorter. A gentle rate.
Films like that going up to 2 hours, I think. But as I was saying, there is like this sort of mini genre, isn't there, of British cinemas doing it a bit, is it? There was one where, was it Jim Broadbent or Timothy Spall got a bus around the country?
Yeah.
I can't remember which one of
them
it was.
See, the thing is, I quite like, I don't like flying, so I want to go to visit places in Britain.
The idea of it is something, and there's Sheila Hancock walking up a hill, wasn't there? It's about 3 or 4 hours that film must have been on for. But it becomes one of these little things, you know, and you see there'll be another one next year with...
Yeah, I mean, I think the central message of it is, you know, living in the moment and, you know, they've got each other and... but it's...
But are they going to be able to save the world from an AI entity?
The first 20 minutes, I'm like, it is very vivid about how rough it is sleeping in a tent, and I was like, I don't want 2 hours of this. But it does, it does get away from that a bit. Yeah. What's next?
Right,
you're Netflixing, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm trying to be fair to Netflix. So, you know, when it's bad, I'm telling you when they're bad, and I'm going to be ruthless. But if you fancy a science fiction series in 6 episodes, although there's going to be more, I can thoroughly recommend an Argentinian show, which is on Netflix and now, which is called...
Did we mention this in Trailer Trash?
I don't think we did.
Yeah, we did.
No, we didn't. No, I was going to review it.
Mm.
We didn't. You weren't here them 2 weeks.
Off my joggers.
Where was I?
You were just about to say the name, and I
yes, yeah, and you bowled me a googly. Wait until you do your next review. The Eternal, I think that's how you say it, and one of its stars is Ricardo Darín, who has been in a number of popular Argentine films which we've seen over the past few years. And it's a very, very interesting show, which is based on a comic strip which came out in Argentina in the in the 1950s and is one of the key pieces of Argentinian science fiction culture. It's massively popular there. And it's about, it's all set in Buenos Aires, and a group of people having a gathering at their home, and it's the height of summer and it starts snowing outside. And the streets are empty, and one of them goes outside to try and get home. And as soon as he gets home and the snow makes contact with his skin, he falls over and dies. So this is like the first part of the film, and where it's almost like this sort of dystopian, this stuff's coming from outer space and it's killing us all. And as the show moves on, it turns into a bit of Starship Troopers.
Oh, yeah.
And then by the end of the final sixth episode, you're in Invasion of the Body Snatchers territory. So it's constantly reinventing itself, and it's absolutely brilliant. There has got to be another series, because you're left with this. So, duh, what now then?
It's not up to Netflix, though, is it?
I think they're
notorious for not. Or is it because it's an overseas production?
It looks like it's been a co-production. Right. But if there are only these six episodes, it's a terrific 6 hours of TV. It's I just thought it was brilliant. Really, really loved it. I'm rating it.
I'm going to catch that. Well, I've got a rate now.
Go on then.
A rate, great rate.
Shall I interrupt you while you're doing
it? You can. The Ballad. Please interrupt me. I can't talk. The Ballad of Wallace Island. I played a track from it on last week's show.
I heard. And I listened to it.
And I was, I listened to yours as well. Don't worry. And I was trepidatious because... I really quite like Tim Key, who's one of the co-writers. So this is Tom Basden and Tim Key have written this together, and they star in it together. And I saw the trailer for it, and I was like, I've seen that film before. How have I seen this before? And it's an adaptation of their short that they made about 10 years ago, and I'd seen that. So that's why I couldn't figure out why I'd seen it already. But this has got a bit more depth to it. So the premise is lonely millionaire on an island, played by Tim Key, Charles, mega fan of a fictitious folk indie group couple, played by Tom Marsden and Kerry Mulligan. He's got the money, so he invites them to do a reunion gig on his island, and they've split up 10 years before, under whatever circumstances. And their level of fame is like covers of NME, but not like you can still go to the shops kind of fame. And they sit, you can sense this all by the characterisation of these characters. Tim Key welcomes Tom Marsden, and Tom Marsden is just doing it because it's a big paycheck. He doesn't know that he's just literally playing a gig for one person. This is my new favourite film. I absolutely adored it. It's funny without being mawkish. It's sweet without being overly sentimental. And the female characters in it... So you've got Kerry Mulligan, who turns up unbeknownst to Tom Marsden's Chris Singer. Or he's got a really weird name of Herb MacGyver. Or Herb. But his real name is Chris Pinner. And it's just about these lonely men finding... You find out a little bit more about each character that I don't want to spoil. The humour in it, if you like Tim Key, if you know anything about Tim Key, it's for you. I loved it. There's so many puns, and I love a pun. Like, I'll give you one of them. Let's have a look. I've made a halibut supper. It's a hell of a halibut. It's just stupid talking that... I'm deliriously happy about this film, and I might give this a go,
because I adore Kerry Mulligan. I think she is brilliant.
She brings a sense of sort of realism to this man's dreams as well, I think. There's a lot of convoluted plot things in about getting people off the... You know, the way that he's got his money, the way that's revealed, is so ridiculous, but it's hilarious. So, High rate.
Okay, then. Another piece of music.
Can I introduce this one?
Oh, of course you can. Sorry.
This is my contribution to the list. One of my favourites ever. This is Amy Mann, and it's from the film Magnolia.
Mm-hmm. suspect they could never love anyone.
Magnolia. The video for that was directed by the director of the film, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yep.
And famously, he kept the actors there, so she was actually in the scenes with them.
Yes,
the
yeah.
Anyway, what we got coming up? We've gone right over, haven't we?
We're not scratching around as we normally are.
Well, if your appetite's been whetted for Tom Cruise, there is a season on A Visit to the Light. You've missed Risky Business, Rain Man this week, Jerry Maguire coming up, and Eyes Wide Shut, and Top Gun.
Oh, can't wait for that. Mm.
You've never seen it, have you?
I've never watched Top Gun, no. Mm.
And yet, our final track.
Yes. Also next week is another John Wick film coming out called Ballerina, which Wild Horses wouldn't drag me to. But don't let me put you off.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't let Martin put you off.
No. Sometimes I'm wrong, but not often.
But this is a cracking tune you've picked to play out.
Yes, yes. You set my breath away. Enjoy your films.
All right.